Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lambert. Today is Sunday, May 10th, 2020. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on Apple Podcasts and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. You can email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. Let me know what's on your mind. More importantly, what's on your heart. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival. And you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lambert. This is episode 423. I have a super special return guest, comedian and professor Justin Williams, one of my favorite guests to have on the show. I'm going to share that conversation with you in a bit. For now, I'll talk to you. I'm going to talk for a few moments. I am sitting here in my apartment on my couch. I need to go to complete phase two of my cleaning process, so I don't look like a total savage. I'll get into that eventually. I had a really busy week doing TPS reports at the day job, which is good. It's almost like when you really want to do something, it's like when I have like my monthly priorities that I want to get done, it's always other stuff that gets in the way. And it's like, I'm doing my thing that I want to do at work. I'm going to get this shit done come hell or high water. Some of this other stuff is going to have to wait, and it's really not that important in the scheme of things. But, you know, I persisted nonetheless, and I overcame what I needed to overcome. And there's other challenges to meet me on Monday. So that keeps me locked in and focused. It makes the days go by actually really fast, faster than I would like in some cases, especially when I have deadlines, like personal deadlines at work that I want to meet. But so that's been a blessing, financially and mentally in a lot of ways. So I'm actually logging in more hours at work than I would if I was actually in the office. So it is what it is. Thankful to have a job. And that, I'm trying to think if there was anything exciting. I went to my favorite, one of my favorite Mexican spots to get takeout. And I was kind of inspired by my parents, who I don't know why the fuck they went out, because they're elderly. But I guess my dad felt they were cooped up. And they went to KFC, and they said it wasn't that good. Where'd the KFC that they went to? And I was like, you motherfuckers, you didn't tell me y'all were going out. I was kind of disappointed, but I was like, well, so be it. And then I just said, you know, I went to my favorite taco place. It's called Carlitos Tacos. It's like barbecue. I'll even look it up for you. Why not? You're not going anywhere. I mean, you could go to this place if you lived in New Jersey. I mean, I can give them free promo, but I'm trying to see where they... So Carlitos, do they have like an about us so I can actually, I don't know that they do. Anyway, they call it a barbecue taqueria. And the first time I heard about it was via Instagram, and they opened up a store. It's like this upscale. You have a regular food court where you have your Blimpies or your Wendy's or your Taco Bell. So this like at the Garden State Plaza, they have that. And then they have kind of like an upscale place where the food it's more premium. Like they have got the Shake Shack, this place called Mighty Quinn's. There's like some pizza place up there. There's a Bar Louie, and then they have Carlitos. And I tried it. I think they've only been around for like a couple years, not even 2 years. But anyway, I tried this place and I was like, oh my God, this is fantastic. So at least once a month, I like before the age of the Rona, I liked to go there, but you had to go in the mall and you're like, oh, I don't want to go in the mall. And you had to park and all that stuff. And this Garden State Plaza is the biggest mall. I think it's the biggest mall in New Jersey. At one time it was, and I believe it still is. But so I would go there, and it's great food. And so with the mall shutting down, they moved to this town in Lyndhurst, New Jersey, which is like, I don't know, it's like 20 minutes away from me. And so I went there yesterday and called the order in. As soon as I got there, it was ready, and it was fantastic. It was great. It was so good. And that was like a nice treat. And it wasn't that harrowing, but I noticed while I was driving down there were just so many, it was a lot of people out, and it almost looked like there was a strip mall where it just looked like there were so many cars like packed in. I guess people want to get out. I think things are slowly opening up, but it's still kind of concerning where I feel like I've been a shut-in, and it's just people going out. I saw people out with no masks. People were walking around. I found out that we have a Krispy Kreme in East Rutherford, New Jersey. And I just looked, oh, we got a Krispy Kreme. I didn't know that. And I think maybe I'd heard something about that. Like, I used to do open mics in East Rutherford on Friday nights. And there's a shopping center like down Route 17. And I was like, oh, Krispy Kreme. There were cars wrapped around that place. There were cars at Sonic wrapped around Sonic. And here I am going to this little Mexican taco spot. Really like technically they're designer tacos. They're upscale tacos. They make this thing called queso taco where it's like they put cheese in the tortilla and they put the fix, you know, put the fixings in it. It's so good. So shout out to Carlitos, man. And they do good stuff for the community. Like they feed people. They feed the essential workers. I see on their Instagram where they're constantly doing stuff in the community. So, I mean, hey, if there's a couple hundred people that listen to this show and you live in Bergen County, or you live like around like Newark or wherever, and you want to go somewhere, check them out. Check out their website, CarlitosTacos.com. It's great. So that was... that was like the little a treat that I had for myself. I've been watching YouTube people talk about The Last of Us. Been watching the story trailer drop. So the game's coming out June 19th. Super excited. I've been spoiled, but now it's getting to the point where I've seen stuff, but I think it's really only a fraction of the game. Like they had like an hour and a half of footage that they released that got leaked, and I still can't wait to play this game. I mean, the way that trailer looked, and I'm just so excited. I'm gonna have to take a PTO day. If anybody that works with me listens to this, I'm taking a PTO day, and I feel like I deserve it. I can't wait, man. It's so incredible. Like I randomly just started playing like Friday night. I played a little bit Friday, like the first opening sequence or whatever. And then I had to get on a Zoom call or whatever. I forgot, and I played it. I think I played it last year. Like I did like a playthrough. I think the last time I did like a playthrough was 2018. Then I played a little bit at my barber shop where I was trying to get him through my barber through some stuff. I told you about that before. But I just got engrossed in it again. And that game's like 7 years old. That's the only game. That's probably the only game that I've replayed like that. And it's still compelling. I'm not hardcore like the homie. Shout out to the homie Tajay Moment, who I big up a lot. Check out his YouTube channel. If you're a nerd like me and you're into video games, and he's really like a great content creator for The Last of Us, and he's been blowing up and killing it. And there's a lot of, I'm just saying he's killing it. He's getting so good at this. He's getting hate from people. Like people made a fake Twitter account, the parody account, or like a fake Twitter account to try to shit on them. And I see where these people are upset about. They're upset about the leaks. They don't know what's going on. Like they haven't played the game. And so they're saying, oh, you know, saying bad stuff about the development team, Naughty Dog, and they're going crazy and they're having all these videos. They're getting copyright strikes for talking bad about the game or talking about the leaks and all this stuff. It's just a whole shit show. And in the midst of this shit show, you got this young, and a lot of these people that are doing it are white people, white men, some black that I'm kind of disappointed in that shit too. But that's that whole, like, Jason Whitlock, if you kind of go against, it's just this weird realm of YouTube that's like, it's really toxic. And I'm saying it like that because I don't like saying the shit like that. But I don't know. Right now, that's at this time of the morning, that's the vocabulary that I have for that. And it's very like, it's off-putting. And it's just, and in the midst of that shitstorm, you got this young black dude that's really hyped for the game and really positive. He's good at what he does. And it's just like, they're trying to attack him. And it's like, it's funny to me that it's really funny that these white dudes are attacking a black guy. It's like, yeah, that's not, it ain't funny. It's just like, it's not fucking surprising. And it just pissed me off. And so he's going to get through that, and he's blowing up and he's doing his thing. Hopefully he hasn't blown up too. I think he got the Mundane Festival bump. I think he got the Mundane Festival bump and he's blowing up and he's doing his thing. Hopefully I can get him back on the podcast like mid to late June after the games come out and after, you know, I've beat it. I'm sure he's beating it like within the first weekend. So I'm hoping that he can come back on and we'll shoot the shit and break down the game and stuff. And I'm looking forward to that. So that's work, TPS reports, and The Last of Us Part Two is giving me some form of sanity. Something to look forward to. I'm trying to think what else. My album, my comedy EP, album, whatever you want to call it, Failed Running Back, is going to be out on May 15th, this Friday. Buy it. If you listen to this podcast and if I ever entertained you by any of this shit that I'm doing with this podcast, please buy it. It's $8.91. So it'll probably be $9 and change. It's not even 10 bucks. It's not even, you know. So give it. It's good. It's really good. I'm really proud of it. I think it's the best thing I've ever put out, probably. I would say. It's probably the only thing. I mean, if you count, you know, if you ever, like when I've headlined and stuff and you bought a ticket, that was cool, you know. But like a piece of media, you know, it's good. And I think it's gotten, I've gotten some compliments from people that I really respect. And I was like, oh shit, wow. Okay. And so I've gotten, people have said, Chris, I didn't know you were this funny. I thought you were cool, but I didn't know you were this funny. So I'm really excited about that. So it's pinned. The link is pinned on my Twitter. Right now it's currently available for pre-order on, iTunes and Amazon, and then it's going to open up into these other platforms probably when it gets released and stuff on Friday. So let's make it number one. Let's take down some titans, you know. Let's beat Chris Rock's second comedy album. Let's beat Jim Gaffigan's third comedy album. Let's beat John Mulaney, new in town. I actually went to that taping. Let's beat those dudes. Let's beat those dudes for at least 15 minutes on Friday. Let's be number one. Let's fucking be number one on Friday. Pre-order it. It's good. It'll make you laugh. If you're feeling sad, it'll make you laugh. It's a guy opening himself up and, you know, telling his story. So this was like this album, EP was a reaction to what I've been saying when I've been kind of getting interviewed on this virtual press tour that I'm doing. It's a project that it was a response to this pandemic. Like I felt like, man, if I die, what do I have? What did I leave the world with? Like, yeah, I did stand up live and made people laugh, but is there a document of that? No, there isn't. I felt like there was nothing, you know? So I was being a little too precious about my material and say, I'm going to do it like this and I'm going to record it and I'm going to wear these sneakers. I'm wearing these Jordans. I'm going to wear this shirt and I'm going to have this person open the show and host it. And it just the time happened and other things, life things happened, acting roles happened, and it kind of got pushed to the back burner. And now we're here, and this stuff was recorded from 3 shows. So a couple of bits are from a show that I did in New York City, like a cool hip spot in New York City at Subculture in New York City. One set was recorded, one bit was recorded at the Borgata in Atlantic City, New Jersey, earlier this year. There's a set that I did. The title track was recorded at the DC Improv, which now we know may or may not be around after this. And the last bit was recorded at one of my favorite places to perform in New York City at Gotham Comedy Club in the Vintage Lounge. Just kind of like me, just kind of creating on the fly, trying to get some thoughts out. I kind of call that place like my lab, the lab. So yeah, it's kind of like a mixtape, but it's jokes and no music. So, and I'm really proud of it. And, thanks to, Andy Klein for, being getting the sound to work right and all that good stuff. And it's chopped up and edited myself. And, I hope you guys enjoy it. So that's my pitch to you guys. I'm funny. I hope you like it. I think it'll make you laugh. So check that out. I think that is it. I've talked long enough. I want to just give you over to my conversation with Justin Williams. So I had Justin. This was in the can. This was about 3 to 4 weeks into the pandemic, into the lockdown. And I always love having Justin on the show. He's so smart. He's so funny. And I just wanted to shoot the shit with him. And yeah, basically that's what it is. It's me talking to the very funny, very intelligent Justin Williams. So I hope you enjoy. Take it easy, everybody. So I've been asking everybody, and I'm sure you've probably been getting this from your other colleagues and friends, like, how are you holding up, man? How are you holding up in this?
I'm holding up fine. We're going into what, week 3 or 4?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. It's been great just working on my marriage.
Oh shit. That's so loaded. That answer's so loaded.
Yeah, there's a lot of like, you just need some time to really work on your marriage during a pandemic. That's basically what's going on.
Oh
shit. The house. So that's been like really, that's been really nice. It's been like, what I didn't realize is how much money, I mean, I guess I did realize this, but now it's really like how much money I was spending just being in bars and restaurants.
Oh God,
like,
dude.
Like 4 to 5 days a week.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's a really, on one hand, it's like awful economically, mm-hmm. Especially like, I'm just fortunate enough to have income outside of all my live income that is gone, right?
Yeah.
So, but on like one hand, I'm like, I think I might actually be saving money through this.
Yeah. Because
like the club is shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, it's been a weird time. I'm getting a little antsy now. This is pretty brutal now. Like getting into a month.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So.
And you moved, did you move recently within the last year?
I didn't move yet, but so my house is for sale and I'm buying another house.
Okay.
And so that was kind of a thing where it's like, you know, there's all these, like, there's permits and inspections and all these things. So, you know, the worry was that if the global economy, like, shuts down, is that going to impact? Luckily, that hasn't impacted those things. Everything's still moving. So
that's good.
So that's, you know, that's good. I have nothing to complain about. I am so, like, fortunate through all of this.
I feel the same way because I'm able to work from home, do my day job from home. So that's kind of been keeping me focused for at least like nine and a half hours a day. Like, I can do that. And then sometimes I'll talk to some of my coworkers on the phone and stuff like that. So it's, you know, and my own real concern is just my parents. Like, I've been buying them groceries and stuff and getting it delivered, and they've been wiping it down and all that stuff. And
they still live, like D.C. area?
Yeah, they're in D.C. area. And today I went to the grocery store after not having been in about 2 weeks. And I went to Wegmans, which is in Montvale. And I get I would argue that that's the largest store in Bergen County. I'll just say it is, because it's on. They built it off of an old farmland on top of an old farm area, and people were wrapped around the building. And I was like, "No, I'm not going in there." And so I just ended I ended up going to Stop and Shop in Emerson, and it ended up just being like a regular visit. Although there were some things that obviously people have, you know, wiped out the paper goods and stuff, but other than that, it was kind of normal. You know, I had my mask. I had a T-shirt wrapped around my face, and I had my hoodie on. And, you know, I felt okay. It was still kind of, you know, odd, but it was relatively unceremonious, you know, for it to be a pandemic, you know.
Well, normally, you know, it could be dicey being a big black guy wearing a mask in public in Bergen County.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and I might have been one of the only black people at that store. It's actually more diverse in Montvale than it is in Emerson, because Montvale's so close to the Garden State Parkway, so you're getting a little bit of everybody coming there, and then they'll go. I'm assuming a lot of them. They opened up a Stu Leonard's in the Paramus Mall, which is like maybe 10 or 15 10 minutes away from that. But yeah, I just try to stay away, stay inside, and, you know, really just keep trying to flatten the curve as much as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I say if you're running, Bergen County is mostly, well, yeah, it'd be all suburban. There's no urban center there. If you ever, which means that, you know, you have more of the panic shopping happening there.
Yes, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you just this is where hood grocery stores are very important.
Mm-hmm.
They're very well stocked.
Yeah,
because the panic shoppers will not go there because dudes sell drugs outside of there. So those dudes that sell drugs are actually helping the community now.
Well, your mayor is holding it down though. Roz Baraka is like making people go do press conferences when they're not flattening the curve. Is he still doing that? Is it?
We're in like kind of complete lockdown now, so he really doesn't have to do that. But initially, there was a guy who lives in some projects that actually aren't too far from my house, he put up an Instagram live video of him like defying the police.
Yeah,
and then the mayor came and found him, and made him do a press conference apologizing to the city and explaining the severity of the crisis.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he's a former high school principal.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like, you know, it's definitely, that's one of his, that was a very high school principal move.
So people.
But we have to take it very seriously because, you know, we're, you know, the most densely populated place in the state, you know.
Yeah.
So
people are behaving.
Yeah, there's like a line at Whole Foods and stuff. You know, it's like everyone's wearing a mask.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people really, the streets are very quiet. Something's happening. It's really clean.
yeah.
Like, where did all the people just quit throwing bottles on the ground? I guess because it's part of this, which is, I think, is like a nice thing. But but no, yeah, people are taking it, you know, very, very seriously. And it almost is interesting because it's kind of a political divide, right? It's like the more liberal the place is, the more it took it seriously. The more conservative the place, it became about like defying scientists.
Yeah, that's so dumb, man.
It's pretty dumb. We'll see the disastrous results. The numbers are going to really start climbing in some places. My family's from Missouri, which Missouri has a Republican governor.
Yeah.
But Kansas City's a liberal city. So Kansas City's been in lockdown for over 2 weeks at this point. Mm. They like immediately locked down the city. The governor finally issued a stay-at-home order, I think, yesterday.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay.
So we're already starting to see that in the city where you would think there'd be the most infections, that's not the case. It's actually in the more Republican areas are where a lot of the infections are located, kind of in like the more Ozarkian part of the state.
Man.
It's a weird time to be alive, to just openly defy the scientists during a crisis, I mean, have you seen like Dr. Drew and all of these people?
He said some stupid shit.
He's been saying it.
What did he say? So like,
oh, it's overblown, blah, blah, blah. It's the flu.
Oh, my God.
All the things that were wrong. And he's like, double down on this. And it's like, guys, Dr. Drew was on Loveline.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, it's like he may not be a better source than the CDC.
Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I did see somebody post it, say, how they dunk on people when people do something stupid. This is a disgrace. So somebody did that to him. So I just didn't click on the video.
Oh, it's so bad. It's a compilation with a timeline of like how you're wrong. And you're getting like more aggressive in the wrongness as you're like more wrong.
Wow.
It's one of those ones. It's the kind of thing you never want as a public figure.
Jesus.
You don't want multiple receipts put into a Hall of Fame highlight reel.
Yeah, because that's nothing, and then they die. Like that's wasn't it a pastor in Virginia somewhere that said it's not a big deal, and then he got it and died.
You're seeing cases like that, churches that have been labeled as essential businesses in some red states, allowing all kinds of people to congregate. Liberty University invited their students back onto campus, Jerry Falwell Jr.'s school, and then a bunch of kids got sick, and then they finally shut the campus down again.
Wow. Liberty is where? That's not the one in Pennsylvania, is it?
The one in Virginia. Super right-wing school.
Oh,
it's kind of grown into like this global sort of global powerhouse. They've really grown it, right? But it's like, but it's also like, this dictatorship in this way, right?
Oh, okay.
Like, yeah, like these professors are writing like, please someone help us. He's going to make us go back to work.
My dumb ass is thinking of Lehigh where CJ McCollum went, but that's in Pennsylvania. That's like Bethlehem area.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, what the hell am I thinking? Okay, that makes sense now. Yeah. I've been saying it like every episode now, like just every episode that's in the can, it's affecting everybody. Like if you don't have it, you know somebody that's got it, you might have known somebody that's died. Your job might have been affected by it,
I've had a couple friends that have had it. I mean, we know
a couple comics.
We know mutual comedians that have had it. It's pretty wild stuff. But I'm honestly, this is gonna sound kind of weird, I'm honestly surprised that this is the first time that we've gone through these type measures, just with how much contact we have with the world and each other and everything.
Yeah,
right. I mean, it's just like, I think the New York Times just did a story today. It's just like all the people that have still come back from like China and have been screened and stuff like that, or other, just other zones. I don't know. I have weird thoughts like that. I'm like, I think about, I live next to like Newark Airport.
Wow. Yeah.
It's like people are coming and going and everything. I'm like, it's actually kind of surprising that, SARS didn't do this, the first one,
Mm-hmm.
Or bird flu.
Yeah, it's because I was working on a show on Broadway, and the weeks, there was a couple weeks where prior to everything shutting down, you'd see people with masks. The Asian people knew, they had their masks. They never really took them off.
Yeah,
you know, and now you can't find one. You know, it was definitely something in the air, and like it, I always go back to that before everything shut down. It's like Tom Hanks got it, and they shut down the NBA. Like within 5 minutes, I saw those tweets, and I was like, "Oh shit, this is real. This is not a game."
Yeah, with the NBA shutting down, that was the real. I mean, what's so crazy is that you had like the NBA shutting down before the government had even made that decision, right?
Yeah.
You knew it was going down when it's just like, all right, no Lakers game.
Yeah, it's insane. You know? And as you say that, I've got NBA TV on mute, and they're showing the Kobe highlights because he got inducted into the Hall of Fame. Tim Duncan and Kevin Garnett as well. But yeah, like it's crazy how you think it's not even that crazy. I don't even say that shit anymore, dude. It's like we. Most of the people that I know that are in my circle that I connect with in my community, we did the right thing in November 2016. Anything that happens after that, it's like you motherfuckers did that. Like they know who they are.
Oh, there will be no responsibility taken. There will be no accountability taken. You know, it'll be a hoax or. They'll come up with all kinds of things. It, you know, people thinking that, like, oh, blah, 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 blah. It's, dude, you're talking about people that live in a separate reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they started telling the scientists this and that and trying to talk over the scientists and stuff like that, it's like, you can't have a reasonable debate. Like, there's no such thing as consequences in a world like that for them. So I don't even attempt the, you know, these people attempting to even address people who think differently. It's like at this point you're so like, I'll put it this way, you're locked in your house.
Mm-hmm.
People are getting sick, thousands of people are dying, and you're still saying this is a hoax.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't reach someone
right
that's gone that far down. It's like what else would it take for them to like, what is the guy got? He literally, I mean, he's right, you know, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. And they would still support me.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you just think like it was crazy because like I'll go back to this again. There's this pizza shop that I go to sometimes when this place called Emmett's. It's in off of McDougal. It's near like the Chicago style pizza they have.
Yeah.
And the owner just went on his Instagram and just did a video like he sounded better than our president. The way that he was talking about everybody pulling together and trying to see what we could do to, you know, still serve people in the community with food and stuff. You know, it was just like he had more poise and gravitas than our administration. And it was just like, and this guy just runs a pizza place, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, the absolute lack of leadership. Well, I mean, that's the kind of thing I sort of appreciate about Trump. In an interesting way is like the fact that he can't be a human being under any circumstances, right? Like, you know, they ask him a softball question, right? What do you say to Americans that are scared because of this? And every president knows this is where you give the Independence Day speech by Bill Pullman. Every president knows that I could do that. And he just goes, you're a terrible reporter. You're the worst, the failing Washington Post or whatever. You know what I mean? He doesn't even have that button. Like, I'll put it this way. It's like Data from Star Trek is more human than Donald Trump is.
Yeah.
Name any time where you've seen Donald Trump show empathy, like, hey, I know what you're going through. Or just even if I don't even know what you're going through, I'm really sorry about that. You're hurting.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He doesn't have that. He has like combat mode. That's all he has.
Yeah, no capacity to just care about anybody or anything.
Yeah, I mean, to go up there and just like talk about the economy.
Yeah.
we got to get the economy back open again. It's like people are dying, you know.
Yeah.
It's just wild. I think that's what makes it more perplexing, the support for him, because it's like he doesn't even fake like he cares about even his base.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, he doesn't care about them. They don't see that. I don't know, man. Yeah, go ahead.
But it's about anger. It's like they don't need him to care about them as much as they need somebody to go after who they don't like.
Yeah. I just refuse to be surprised by it. Anything that he says or does, like, at this point, it's just I refuse to be like to send off an angry tweet or just real. I just refuse. I'm not. You know, obviously, it's just like we had our chance collectively as a nation to do the right thing, you know. But it's I don't know. Let's move on to lighter things, unless you want to talk about something, unless you want to continue.
I'll say one thing. I mean,
go ahead.
I mean, I'm like you too, where it's like, yeah, why should we shouldn't be getting surprised? Like, it's like the guy has been authentically. This is what he offers,
mm-hmm.
and he's delivering. I will say, though, I was still shocked when he started tweeting about his ratings. It's pretty wild.
Mm-hmm.
That's even, like, I mean, it's just wild.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, who would even think, like, that would never cross my mind as the president of crisis, or just the president at any time, but it's like the rating, and it's like, who is the audience for that?
Right.
It's like, even if, let's say, you support the guy for whatever reason, like, I say that's actually kind of the scary thing about it. It's like there's no other, it's not about, you know, it's such a cult of personality that it's like,
yes,
if anybody else started tweeting about their ratings, that would be the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
They would yank him out of there like somebody bombing at the Apollo.
Yeah, it's always like, if that was Obama, it's like, I don't care anymore. I refuse.
It's not even Obama. I mean, anybody, if they were talking about their TV ratings, they'd mm-hmm. put them in an insane asylum.
Yeah, yeah. How are you? So I'm going to ask you this that I ask everybody. How are you coping? What are you doing? Are you working? Are you teaching and whatnot still? Or?
Yeah, we're teaching. We went all online. So, mm-hmm. Kenny. Yeah, we shut down in-person meetings for classes.
Mm-hmm.
God.
When you're a professor, the people know about that. They should know if they listen to this.
Yeah, professor at City College in New York. We shut down about 3 weeks ago.
Okay.
So, you know, again, learn how to use Blackboard Collaborate Ultra.
Wow.
To communicate with the students.
Okay.
A lot of people have been using Zoom. Zoom has been getting hacked by a lot of white supremacists. And
yeah, it's so weird. Yeah.
So I haven't had to deal with that. I just have to do a Blackwell Collaborate Ultra. It just, like, doesn't work a lot.
Oh, okay.
That's the thing. It's just like, oh, it's just not a good software. Oh. Zoom is a good software, but they can't keep the white supremacists out of it. So.
Jesus. Yeah, I know. Didn't they get on some black hockey prospect, like, for the Rangers or something, like a couple nights ago?
Oh, they've been on everybody. I saw, like, a black lady that teaches at, like, Howard.
Jesus.
Like, you know, teaching my class, and Nazi symbols and dicks and everything, you know.
Man.
Yeah, it's it's a wild time, man. What I also like is that there's somebody out there that's such a bad person that's like, oh, people try to communicate with their families during a crisis. This is our chance to be an asshole.
Yeah. It's so weird, dude. It's so weird. I just don't get it. I really don't.
I think there's some silver linings, though. If anybody comes out of this with nothing to say on stage, we get to retire them from comedy. Like, if we're like the first week we're all allowed back in public.
Yeah.
Anybody going, what else in a mic?
Yeah.
They're out. It's like, you didn't write anything that whole time. You don't even, you had all the society experience the same thing, and you don't even have a take on that. You're right. Out of here. You're out of this business.
Well, you know what, though? Like, it's like, it might, maybe it will separate the wheat from the chaff, because a lot of people may have to reconsider some things.
Yeah. And I'm not like, well, I mean, I say, well, maybe this is a New York comedy scene. It's like, I mean, so many comics, I think come from pretty decent, you know, money background. So those people aren't going anywhere. I think they're hanging out at Mike's to hang out and get laid.
Yeah. Okay. Well, speak on this though, because not necessarily the laid part, but like you bring up something where it's like something that I don't know if we've ever touched on it when you've been on the show, but it's like you kind of have to have money to be in this.
Yeah.
You have to have, like, say you do get to go on the road with somebody, you have to have money to open for somebody. Like, you have to have money to go on the road, whether you get to open for somebody or you're doing a gig in upstate New York. You know, you like have to, you got to have cash.
Yeah, or just to be able to live the slump, you know, or just like to live, like, you know, even if you don't have money, like to live impoverished as like a novelty for a little bit as a temporary condition. You know what I mean? Like, oh, I was a starving artist in New York. He's like, yeah, you were able to do that because you didn't grow up in poverty. That's just not fun.
Right.
Like, anybody that grew up in poverty is not trying to, like, then go through a starving artist period.
Yeah, fuck that, dude. I can't do that, man. That's one reason why I didn't do it. I was like, I'll stay in Jersey. I'll follow my dream in New York, and I'll go home. I'll go home to a comfortable apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So it's like living with 25 people to a room and all that stuff. It's like, you think that's cute?
Yeah.
Because you didn't grow up like that.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Because I always take what you said to me years ago, or one time we were just hanging out in my truck or something, we were shooting the shit, and you were like, yeah, man, I don't get why people, they come here from the Midwest or something, and they want to have the Midwest in Brooklyn. It's like, you shouldn't do that. Why you wanted to be just like, I'm paraphrasing what you said, but collectively, yeah. These people want their hometown to be in Brooklyn or to be in Manhattan or in the borough, and it's weird, and it's becoming that now. And
well, and go ahead. Yeah, and it's like all the hottest neighborhoods are the ones, it's like, you know, you look at these hot neighborhood lists, right? And mm-hmm. it's just places that have the highest concentration of people that are like where we're from.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I always thought, found that to be kind of ironic, like, cause it's, you know, sometimes I'll be like, you know, there's like bars in Bushwick. I'm like, this is basically a hip part of Kansas City. Oh. I go, this is the same bar with literally the same people. Like, you know, sometimes I see people I know in these places, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's literally like, okay, we have transplanted this thing. It's like, yeah, it's like, which is fine. It's good that there's a place for that, but it's like, that's not a reason to move to New York, though.
Yeah, no, it's not. Not at all, dude. It's so weird. Like, I was saying a couple weeks ago, I went to a friend's show, and then after the show, we went to this bar. It was low on the Lower East Side, and the bar, like, it was a fucking security guard waiting to let people in, like, at a bar where, it's at Arlene's Grocery. Fuck it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this place where people do stand-up at. And then on Saturday night, just because it's Saturday night, you have to wait in line. I was like, I'm fucking 40. I don't want to do this. Why am I doing this? And I guess I'm just doing it because it's my friend's, I'm celebrating my friend's show. But otherwise, I wouldn't be doing that shit.
Oh, no. I'm with you, man. The past 35. Like, I'm not standing. Once you're past 35, like, line waiting.
Yeah.
And especially for a bar.
Right.
I'm like, I wait in line to see some of the world's greatest DJs play
mm-hmm.
at a spacious club.
Yeah.
With proper seating.
Dude, you know, I was just joking with a friend about, like, talking about concerts and stuff. And I say every time I go to a concert, like, since around 35, I've always felt like an undercover cop. You know, because I have a hoodie on. I have like some comfortable sneakers, like maybe some New Balance or something like that. But it would always be comfortable, and it would just, and I just feel like I didn't fit in. But I love the artist that's performing. Like, I fucking love the guy or gal that are performing. But it's just like, I kind of feel like a cop, especially when I go to Brooklyn.
Yeah, I actually had that exact kind of moment. It was actually pretty recent too, because I'm pretty active in my nightlife.
Like, yeah,
it's the only way I can relieve the stress from all these jobs.
Yeah.
So and it's also like, if I'm going to live here, I want to take advantage of it.
Of course.
Like, if I didn't take advantage of living here, I would just move.
Yeah.
Like, cheaper.
Right. Yeah. Because my favorite thing, that's my favorite thing in the world. Before this the shutdown happened, I was going to see this young soul R&B soul pop guy named Gallant, who's super talented. He was playing at Music Hall of Williamsburg. And they canceled. It was like March. I think it might have been March 15th or something like that. And they canceled that. But before, I have a friend who's in this band, San Fermin. And they were playing, they're like folk, indie kind of. They're really talented. But like, they were playing, what is that new space? It's a new space in Brooklyn. And it's another one of those warehouse places. It's not terminal.
Oh, like Brooklyn Steel.
Brooklyn Steel, exactly. That's what it was. Yeah. And and I had my hoodie on and I had my sneakers and they were like, "Yes, sir, you can come right in, sir." I just felt so fucking old. But there were people that were older than me in there. I would say that, you know, but that's like, that was just one of those things where it's like that cool hip thing where you're just like, yeah, like, why wouldn't I like try to take advantage of this stuff? That's the cool thing. And that was, you know, and that just happened to be on a Friday night where I woke up that Friday morning at 4:30 to go to work and then, you know, work all day and then not go home. And killing time at the movies and then going down all the way to Williamsburg from Westchester. And it's like, that's a lot, dude. You know, so you got to take advantage, you know, especially if you're not, when you don't have a show, you know, you're not performing. It's like, well, I'll go see a show.
Yeah. And you're in one of the entertainment capitals of the world. So it's like, go see these world-class talents that are oftentimes performing for sometimes, you know, not huge cover charges. Right.
Right.
But I exactly had the moment you had where it's like, it's because they called you sir. I had the thing where I was with a group of friends, but I ended up kind of being like kind of by myself for a little bit. And I was just standing at this club in Greenpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Which one is it? Nowadays.
I've never heard of it. Okay.
I was just there and it was just like, there was this Transformer music on and I'm just looking around.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what's weird is like someone in their early 20s now sort of physically looks childlike to me.
Yes, they do. Yeah, really, they do. They do. Yes.
It's like, this is an adult, but like a 23-year-old
mm-hmm.
is child looking. And yeah, it was that thing. I was like, oh, I got to get out of here. Like that was the first. It was like, this is not good.
Yeah. Yeah,
like you're not supposed, like it was like you're not supposed to be here unless you were with more people. But this is why New Jersey, and this is what I love about it. And well, and also there's different parts of New York, so you don't have to go to like Nowadays in Greenpoint. Newark, like New York has all these other places, but Jersey is also this great thing too. To where this is where Jersey, it's like the 40 scene. It's like is just great, right? It's like there are entire places for you. It's like Red Bank, New Jersey was created.
Oh my God, dude.
For like 47-year-olds that are still crushing it.
You hang out in Red Bank?
I'm gonna start.
Dude, I went to see, I fucked up because I was being a nerd. I went down to see, they did a production of Radio Golf at the Two River Theater down there. And so I'd never seen this August Wilson play, and I had never seen it. So I went down there. And it's fucking nice, dude. It's really nice theater. And I think I had went to a benefit down there with that Paul. I was just tagging along with Paul Verzi. And like Kyle Grooms was there, did a set. Marina Franklin did a set. And then a couple other, and Verzi did a set. But I remember being in that theater. But they had like nice restaurants. I was like, fuck, man, I should have stayed. Like I should have eaten there or something, eating at a restaurant around the way. But You know,
Red Bank is great.
It's really nice. Yeah. Count Basie Theater's there.
A ton of MILFs there. You're a single man, right?
Yes. So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you will find the women might be like they're older than you, but they're but they're in incredible shape.
Yeah.
It's an interesting place, right? It's just like where you meet like the just like a 50-year-old divorcee in like leggings that's on at a rooftop bar.
Yeah, and they're having a great time.
They're having a great time. They're the loudest people there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're in groups of like 8. Montclair a little bit.
I love Montclair. Yeah.
Yeah, like Montclair Social Club has an interesting sort of like we're 50 and we're doing this. Kind of vibe.
Too. Have you ever been? I'm trying to think of. Oh shit! Now you got me thinking. I do love Montclair. I just don't spend enough. I don't spend enough time hanging out like I should. But I love Montclair. Oh, have you ever done Ritu Chandra's show in Morristown?
Yeah.
Like I did it. I guess they got a place. It's the Horseshoe Tavern now. But it was somewhere else before that, that was like kind of around the same area. But I just remember being there and they were just like going ape shit. I was like, you guys are, it's Thursday. You guys need to calm the fuck down. What's going on?
Morristown has this real interesting sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
It's geographically not close to any of New Jersey's urban centers, really. And it's also not close to New York City.
Yeah.
So at some point, it just got designated as the everybody in this whole part of the state, kind of like that. That's like the Hoboken of that part of the state.
Oh man, Hoboken still popping at all, or what?
Yeah, it'll always be popping. It's right next to New York City.
Washington Street.
It has its core audience. You know, it's like the frat guy.
Yeah.
And sorority girl that want to keep that going.
Sure.
You know, that got finance jobs. Like, it has its core, you know, audience. And I'd say there's a little bit of overlap between that and, like, Morristown in a lot of ways, right?
Okay.
Yeah, Morristown's, like, this interesting thing because it's, like, it has a nightlife that is way – it's, like, it's kind of like Asbury Park, right? It's, like, okay. If you look it up on Wikipedia, you go, town of 3,000 or something like that. You're like, well, yeah. Not much can be going on there. But what it's not telling you,
yeah,
is that everybody from the 2 to 3 counties over are all flocking there, you know, Thursday through Sunday. You
see,
know?
I can talk to you about this shit, and this is why I like talking to you in general, and like especially having you on the show, where you it's like these places in Jersey where, like, I kind of know, I feel like you would find these places without stand up. But the way that I found certain restaurants and places, it's because of stand-up. And it's like you go to these places. I did a thing at, like, I guess maybe in Point Pleasant. It was on, like, the Jersey Shore. It was probably, like, early spring or late fall, whenever Child's Play came out. Because I remember going to the movies before, going to see Child's Play before I did my set. And it was, like, in, like, Brick, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, like on a Thursday night, it was just like went to the show, and it was like on the shore. It was beautiful. Jenks Comedy Club, like Jenks, like I guess it used to be like a pavilion. It's a pavilion, and it's like it was off season, but it was still really beautiful. Really
nice.
I've
never been there. I've never been. I've been to Point Pleasant, but I've never been to that comedy. I've never done comedy down the shore. I'm the same as you though, as far as like. Yeah, comedy teaches me a lot of things about the town, but I always go and hang out.
Yeah.
You know, I always do, you know, location-based stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll hang out and see stuff. But that also is part of, like, getting to know this state, because it just really, when you get into it, it's like, you know, a 15-minute car ride might as well be a spaceship ride. There's all kinds of different stuff in this place.
Yeah, it's like a beautiful state. People don't really give it, like, enough credit. It's just... I remember when we used to do stand up in February, I did a week of shows at the Borgata, and then it's beautiful. It's great down there doing that club down there. And then I had a gig, like a one nighter in Waretown, New Jersey. It's like right up. I think you would call that Route 9. I'm not 100. I'm saying this shit off the top of my head, but I'd never heard of the place before. And when I was driving up there from the show, it was about an hour from Atlantic City. And when I was driving up there, I saw this old house with a lawn jockey outside and a Confederate flag. And I was staying at the Holiday Inn, which was fine. It was actually a pretty decent hotel. And I was like, okay, I know what I'm in for. But then I get to this club. I get to the room. It's this bar and kitchen place. And then they have this back room that's fucking huge and a really nice. It was a really nice room. And yeah, were the people all white? Of course they were. But I had a good time. But it was just like, oh shit, this is fucking cool. Like, there's so many places like that that you just would never even think it would be okay. You know, like, the one thing I knew, one reason I knew I was going to be okay is because after I checked into my hotel, I went to Wendy's and I saw a black family and the mom had on like a headscarf and she was getting her kids food. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be all right.
Can you mark yourself safe on Facebook then?
I should have. Oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, I was like, oh, okay, I'll be okay.
Yeah, the stereotype, right, of Jersey is it's just always just some variation of turnpike. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, it's just the turnpiker thing. It's like, yeah, you know, if you take any of those exits, it's like mostly nice towns.
Yeah.
like objectively nice places to live.
Right.
And what I do like about it too is that New Jersey like combines town life with actual like waves of international immigration, which actually make it different than small towns, I'd say, in like other parts of the country, right? It's like, yeah, it's a small town, but we have like a Jamaican part of our small town. Or the Irish or the Italians, or you know what I mean? Like, it may be insular in some ways, but it's still connected to something bigger in other ways. So,
Yeah. Because it's no fun if everything is just homogenized. Like, it's just not, it's boring. I mean, I will always consider next to my theater teaching job, the best work experience I've had was working retail at Best Buy in Chicago, where it was like, there's all kinds of people. Like, it was mainly black and Latino and Asian. Black, Latino, Asian. But it was good because it was diverse, you know? It's like different cultures, different people. People talking differently and shit. Like, it just gets so boring if everything's the same.
Just like one dominant cult. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I like those places, but it's, you know, it's real tough where, you know, this is a comedian, right? You go to a gig and if it's in a place that's like, you know, it's like, oh shit, I don't know I don't know anything about the one thing you guys give a shit about.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's tough. Like, does anybody have any other hobbies?
Yeah, it's so weird. Like, it's I'm trying to think what gig this was. I did this show in Poughkeepsie, Laugh It Up Comedy Club in Poughkeepsie. I love that place. And there it was late January, the night before Kobe died. And I go across their bridge. I forget what they call it, I think it's like the half Hudson Bridge.
Yeah.
And they had it lit up in rainbow colors. And I was like, and I riffed on that. I was like, it's not Pride Week or anything. It was like, but you just, I like that you guys support the gay community all year. It's like, it's not a special day. Like, I found some way to riff on it, but it was interesting. And we like, that was kind of like a thing to talk about. I don't know why I brought that up.
No, it's a good story, man. No, because it's like, yeah, like, I think the Hudson River Valley and, like, all these places, that's what I'm saying. Like, people don't realize, like, it's not just Brooklyn. You know what I mean? There's, like, all these this is a cool metropolitan area.
Right.
Like, you can find so many cool little pockets of stuff. I love the Hudson River Valley because of the things that are going on there, right? It's like, there's progressive people, there's like towns that are getting like gentrified in a way that's kind of interesting, you know,
because you wouldn't expect it. It's like, you wouldn't expect that to be that way, and then it's like, oh, okay, well, that made me feel comfortable. And then I was like, I'm not gay, but that made me feel Just made me feel comfortable.
Yeah, it'd be really weird if it was a place that was like super tolerant of gay people but just hated blacks.
Yeah.
Like, that would be a very interesting place.
Like Joe Exotic from fucking Tiger King. I don't know how people got so surprised. Oh, I guess he's canceled now. It's like, nah, he's not necessarily canceled. That's not a, racism is not a deal breaker for some people like it should be.
Yeah.
You know.
It's like the guy has tigers. I don't think people are looking for his ideas on race relations.
Yeah. So, right.
I can't believe the weird guy in Florida that owns tigers.
Yeah.
Has some ideas that are less than forward thinking when it comes to race.
It's true, man. So I don't think I texted you or messaged you like I should have about the Chiefs winning the Super Bowl.
Oh, dude, it was you. Yeah, I mean, it's so funny. I never really think about my net presence.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know what I mean? I thought that, but the Super Bowl made it clear. It's like, oh man, I talk about being from Kansas City a lot because everybody knows.
Yeah.
I got congratulated. I caught a 3rd and 15 pass.
But that's what we do though. I think that's what we do.
I know that's what we do. You know, there's a few of us in comedy that are, I'd say, have kind of a super fan set. I'd say like Leah Bonomo with the Steelers.
Really? Like, yeah.
Courtney McGinnis with the Redskins.
Okay.
There's a few of us that have like very, very public fondness for either our, like, some combination of our hometown or our favorite pro sports team. Yeah, so you know, it was good. And then like you said, like comics, like that's one thing we all have in common. We kind of know where each other is from based on that.
Right.
And we'll say something. So yeah, it was a lot of people like congratulating me, and it was like actually very sweet.
Yeah, I was happy, man. More because Patrick Mahomes is black, but you know, he's, you know, I didn't know about him until 2 years ago. Because, you know, I'm a big black quarterback fan. Like, that's my thing. And
that's like literally your hashtag.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, that's so, you know, it pissed me off when the undefeated was like, oh, year of the black quarterback. I was like, fuck you, dude. You're jumping on the bandwagon because it's hot to be, you know, it's an in vogue thing to like black quarterbacks now. It's like, you know, fuck you, undefeated. But whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not really mad at them, but like, you know, it was one of my coworkers told me like 2 years ago, he's like, oh, you know, the Chiefs, his MVP season. So we're right before his MVP season. One of my coworkers, he's a black guy. He said, Chris, you know, the Chiefs got a black quarterback. And I was like, really? And I looked it up and I was like, oh, Patrick Mahomes, his dad's black. I was like, oh, I guess he's one of my favorite quarterbacks now. And he's good, man. That was a hard one for me to watch. Was it hard for you?
The whole playoffs was hard to watch.
Yeah,
it was just like if you're a Chiefs fan, you've seen so many historic choke jobs,
mm-hmm.
and they just let every team burst out with giant leads.
Yeah, yeah.
Because so you're, as a Chiefs fan, you're thinking every time this is the choke job. So every playoff game was horrible because you go, here comes, here it is.
Yeah.
It's a choke job. You know, we're down 24-0 or something like that. And then Pat Mahomes is just like, oh, by the way, I might be the greatest player in NFL history. And, you know, it's just like something around like the end of the third quarter. He's just like, oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm really good at football. Let's have some fun.
He's like, I'm so good that I, like, to where saying I might be the greatest of all time, mm-hmm. after only 2 seasons as a starter,
yeah.
is not an exaggeration.
Right. Yeah.
It's not the most absurd thing that anyone has ever said.
Yeah, he's amazing. What was that? That was the Oilers. I had a gig in Reading, Pennsylvania. And it was a Firehouse gig, and it was weird because I think they might have been – they were down in that game, weren't they?
Every game, playoffs,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, they were down every playoff game.
And I was like, oh, fuck.
By double digits.
Yeah, and it was on at the restaurant. And then after my set, I looked up. They had just like mollywopped them. They came back, and I was like, oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah, he's really good. I mean, for Kansas City, it's this amazing thing. Like, you had all these choke jobs for a city that's like insanely like a Chiefs live football. It's like trying to describe. It's like being a Chiefs fan is not. You know, no disrespect to other fan bases, but there's no such thing as, oh, we're just casual fans.
Right.
And the way that it's like tied to civic identity, and like the fans are, you know, and it has one of the best, like, if not the best game day experience in the NFL.
Oh, why is that?
Well, it's the loudest outdoor stadium in the world.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, like, you know, they're in, I think, Seattle. Or where, you know, kind of like go back and forth with the world record. So like usually like a third down at Arrowhead Stadium, the fans are so loud that it's like the same decibels of like a 747 taking off. Like like if you ever watch a Chiefs home game, you'll just see quarterbacks just look at the sideline with their arms out. They're like, I can't hear a word you're saying inside my helmet.
Oh my God.
Like I can't hear anything. You know, so teams have to like change their strategy. And that stadium will be rocking even when the team is actually bad. So, you know, it's about the tailgating. So for the fans, it's great, at, not only for the team to win, right? But it's also about Kansas City as this particular like place. It's not even the biggest city in the Midwest, right? Right. It's not even close to the biggest city in the Midwest, right? You know, you gotta remember like Chicago is bigger.
Yeah.
Columbus, Ohio is bigger. You know, there's all these other markets even within the region that are bigger of size, right?
Yeah.
So Kansas City not only wins the Super Bowl, but by having Patrick Mahomes, it's like Kansas City now has the face of the NFL.
Yeah.
So, it's kind of like when Brett Favre went to, I mean, Green Bay is much smaller than Kansas City, but when the Packers have Brett Favre, that put Green Bay, Wisconsin on the map to the world.
Yes.
And it'd be the same thing with Mahomes. You know, it's just like how many people know about Akron, Ohio because of LeBron James.
Right.
So he fits that city perfectly with his personality.
Yeah. He seems to be so level headed and just kind of chill.
Yeah, that's part of it. I mean, the Chiefs fan base is interesting. Like, everybody loves the Chiefs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, like, and you know, like, Chiefs fandom crosses political lines and everything, right? But when you do go to a Chiefs game, you do realize that it's like, oh, we're in the city, but really this is like a pan kind of Missouri experience, right? Like, I go to Chiefs games and I just look around in the stands and I go, oh wow, I really appreciate the fact that Barack Obama was ever elected president of this country, because I'm like, this is the public,
and yeah.
it's not the one that, you know what I mean, you're like, oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
this is who's at these town halls and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
And Mahomes, like, and that's why they love him too, right? It's like, Mahomes, you threw for, I mean, Midwesterners are such suckers for, like, humility. So it's just like, hey, Mahomes, you threw for 800 yards and 27 touchdowns just in the fourth quarter tonight. that blew off, you've broken every record in the NFL. Well, you know, I just want to thank my teammates.
Yeah.
My teammates went out there and just did such a great job. Coach Reed had a plan, and we just executed the plan, you know, and I just want to do best thing. You know, maybe there's some kids that have cancer, but I'm looking to get some money. You're like, oh, my God. Guy's All-American.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy. I looked at this YouTube clip of him, like, he wasn't heavily recruited for football because everybody thought he was going to play baseball, and they just kind of, like, just assumed it about him, and then he just became this like great prospect, and just like killed it. I don't think anybody really saw that coming.
No, yeah, I mean, especially because he was a Texas Tech quarterback.
Yeah,
you know, like, I come out of college, everybody's like, oh, well, all those guys put up big numbers, you know. Yeah, he's just. I mean, I knew something was special. My brother at the time was working for the Chiefs, so he got to see these practices. in the rookie year.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, dude, you know, Alex Smith is a great quarterback. He was our starter. He's actually one of the best quarterbacks technically in Chiefs history. He's one of the most winning quarterbacks in Chiefs history. But like, as Alex Smith is like going 11-5, my little brother sent me a text message like, this dude, Pat Mahomes, is going to be a problem.
Oh, really? How did your little brother know?
So he was working football operations. So
that's right. What was his? I mean, with the, I don't know. Don't spoil his job or whatever. You know, mess him up. But
yeah, no, it's just, you know, he was working with the team. You know,
okay.
What I mean?
Okay.
So, you know, he'd be out there, you know, either assisting the coaching staff, or you know, he'd be out there at training camp, right? And you see that, and he also has relationships with the players. You know, it's like if you're friends with, you know, somebody like Chris Jones or something.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he just tells you, hey, man, this guy's good. He did something that was real wild. You know, he's doing wild stuff just in practice.
Wow, yeah.
So, yeah, you kind of – and you saw, I mean, even, you know, he got to start one game. You know, he started against the Denver Broncos the year before he became a starter in that game, and you saw it. It was like, oh, man, this guy's so good. You go, oh, my God.
How do you watch? Do you watch from, like, do you get the Sunday ticket or do you red zone it?
So I go to an illegal site that mirrors me through three Swedish websites.
Holy shit.
to watch it for free or something.
Okay. All right. Say no more.
Yeah. Or, you know, there's a few Chiefs bars in the city that sometimes I might go to, like John Brown's Barbecue in Long Island City.
Okay.
I watched the Super Bowl at Pick Beach Barbecue.
Where's that?
In Brooklyn.
Oh, you went all the way to Brooklyn?
Yeah, a friend of mine set up a kind of a Chiefs watch party there.
Oh, that's cool.
So,
do you have any friends from like undergrad or anything out here that are non-comics, like that have?
Yeah,
like,
for sure. Yeah, yeah.
And you guys get together. Annie. Okay.
Yeah. She was there. She's been, in and around New York City for a long time. She moved here before I did, and She's my, editor of our college newspaper.
Oh, okay.
She's here. Yeah. So it's like, and then there's the University of Missouri Alumni Association of New York City. When I used to go there before, it was like you had a predatory feeling, just being at things like that. When I used to go to those things, I made a lot of friends that we still kind of watch the game.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, it's always good because I kind of figured – you just be at your home pacing. You and your wife just like kind of pacing around over a sub or some shit.
That's a lot of it, but yeah, sometimes I go to a bar to pace.
Okay.
I'm still doing the pacing though. It's just in public.
Because I was by myself. I mean, I know like you're a hardcore fan and I'm a black quarterback advocate. So I was just, I was by myself. I was just like, oh, fuck. I was like, I'm turning this shit off. I was like, I'm going to watch the Taylor Swift documentary. But I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I didn't turn away from it.
No, it's a great time. You know, and they're kind of really setting it up. The league really wants to set up a rivalry between him and Lamar Jackson as like the quarterback battle of the next, decade.
Yeah.
Which is kind of like a fun thing to have the league focus on those two. You know, kind of an interesting thing. We'll see. I mean, we'll see what happens though,
Do you predict, are we going to start up football on time? Do you think?
I don't know, man. This is wild. And I don't know.
Yeah.
You got people still not taking this seriously. I don't know how long this is going to last.
Right. Because I think they were going to – because I know with all the free agency stuff happening, I'm sure the draft will be okay. I mean, they can just do that on TV. I mean, it'll suck.
Well, there's going to be some bad draft picks, though.
You guys have bad draft picks?
No, there's going to be bad draft picks. Nobody's been able to, like, see
anybody. Oh, see anybody. Yeah, okay. And then,
Yeah.
That's, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's true.
There's going to be a lot of people that are going to have, things that people knew about that are going to like get into the draft. And it's we could have told you that.
Because I know the only one that I know about is, what is it, Tua from, what's that kid?
From Alabama.
From Alabama. Like he's coming off an injury and all that stuff. And he said, I can play. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I hope we get back to some form of normalcy, even though I don't think it's never going to be the same. it's, you know what I mean? Like, we're going to be changed forever by this, but I think we will get back to some normalcy.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. I mean, at the minimum, we got like another month of this, right?
So they say. What do they say? Like April 30th? In Maryland, I think. Maryland or Virginia, I think they said June. All the kids are out of school for good until the end. I think the end of the year in Virginia. I might be speaking out of turn, but I don't
know. Yeah, so, well, you know, if we get out, everything will be relatively on time. We're back in May, but.
Yeah.
I'm a baseball fan too, but it's okay if we don't do all 7,000 of those games.
Yeah, and then maybe they'll mean more. Maybe the games will mean something.
Yeah, man, my team's predicted to be bad too, so we don't.
The Royals won recently, right?
We won in 2015.
Yeah,
but you knew, the price you knew, yeah, because the economics of baseball are just different, right?
Yeah, because it's a small market team.
Yeah, small market team. So it's like you load up and maybe you sneak out of there with the win, but then all the rich teams are going to come, you know, buy all your players basically, and you're going to suck.
Yeah.
So we're kind of at that trying to climb out of the post championship sucking period. But yeah, it's brutal when bad baseball is brutal because your team just keeps losing.
How do you feel? What are your thoughts on? Oh, continue what you were going to say because I wanted to ask you a follow up question.
Well, watching a team lose like over 100 games in a year, like you should, like they should be a thing where they like actually kick you out of the league at some point. So it's like it's not fair to make you finish that season.
Yeah, yeah. Give me your thoughts on the Houston Astros. Like, how do you feel about that scandal, the cheating, and all that?
I mean, it's the worst, man. Baseball is just, you know, baseball is a whole can of worms when it comes to punishment and stuff like that. You know, it's like some people get punished more than others, but yeah, that's like systemic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's bad, man. It's like people are going to lose their career, but the Astros won't have to give back that title.
Mm-hmm.
What I was interested in to see is how many people that cheated, like how many pitches are these guys going to get hit by? And like in like meaningless situations,
yeah.
In the year, it's like, yeah, I think you throw with that guy, right?
Oh man, yeah, it's gonna be all bad, dude. Yeah,
yeah, the players are mad, you know.
Right,
you know, they cheated, man. You know, and the players didn't get punished. You know,
mm-hmm.
People lost their careers, so it's a really bad situation. But there's just so much cheating in baseball, you know, in our lifetime. You know,
I mean, mm-hmm.
Do you ever go back and watch the 2001, or just go watch like 1998 baseball?
The only thing that connects me is this is like Brady Anderson. Dude, like I mean. I'm not trying to act like I'm righteous or anything, but I think for me, it was just kind of like, we had the break. It was like, I went to the All-Star Fan Fest in 94. My dad took me there because it was at Camden Yards, and went to the Fan Fest, missed going to the Home Run Derby to see Ken Griffey Jr. hit the B&O warehouse. When he was doing the Home Run Derby, kind of fell off after that. Like Ken Griffey Jr.'s decline was kind of me being out of it to a certain degree. Like just kind of like losing interest. And then 98, it brought it back. Like Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire brought it back. And they, you know, they were roided up. And that's when everybody started to give a shit again. And people were, you know, hitting these home runs. And it was just kind of like, oh, these dudes were cheating? Oh, well, I don't know, man. I just kind of lost interest. But I still would go to a baseball game. It's a fun event. Still haven't been to the Nationals' new park.
Yeah, I just go back and watch those 2001 ones just because you just get to see Mark McGwire. Like, it's just fun watching someone who's just, like, on a ton of steroids. Like really long home runs, like Barry Bonds.
Yeah.
It's like you look at all these balls. I mean, there's a great compilation you can look at, right?
Okay.
Where it's just like longest home runs in Major League Baseball history.
Okay.
And it's all guys that are juicing for the most part. It's like from like 19, like let's say, I don't know, like 88.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see it kind of start climbing. And then the amount of like 500-foot home runs that you see getting hit by the time you get to the late 90s.
Damn.
It's like they're all clustered together in this period of crazy. Like the late 90s through like the first years of the 2000s.
Shit, man. I can believe it, because I mean, you're seeing those highlights and just jacked. I mean, I used to know. I mean, I guess when you get older and you start pursuing things and it's like education and your passion of like, you know, theater, comedy, whatever it is, teaching, and you just kind of just some of it goes to the back burner. I like admire you that you still like keep up as much as you do. But I guess it's easier like you have a team. I just kind of like players, and then I kind of get locked in during the playoffs, especially for the NBA and NFL stuff. But I find myself within the last 3 to 5 years enjoying football a lot more than I used to. I don't know if that was because Red Zone helped, I think.
Yeah, and I know you're a fan of certain players, but do you root for either the Ravens or Redskins because of where you're from?
No, well, now I do, the Ravens. Before that, it was just like it was the black quarterbacks. I mean, it was Cam Newton, it was, you know, Russell Wilson, you know, but now it's just like you kind of just want to see a good game, and you like, you know, I've enjoyed it a lot more within the past like 5 years or so.
Yeah, you got a lot of young, dynamic guys that have like amazing athletic ability, but mm-hmm. they've also combined that with like, you know, kind of, you know, the sort of racialized way that people used to look at black quarterbacks doesn't really apply, because the modern black quarterbacks kind of like have both those. I mean, like a guy like Patrick Mahomes, right? It's like if you take kind of like that Peyton Manning, Tom Brady way to analyze a defense, but then combine it with like, you know, like
the athleticism.
Yeah, with a bunch of freakish athleticism.
Yeah.
But you can't say Pat Mahomes isn't smart.
No, you can't.
He called the wasp play. He called that play in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
He knew the pass rush was like NFL Films does a great breakdown of it, right? He goes, "We got time to run wasps," and they go, "He's not talking about clock time. He realizes that they're at third down, the pass rush where he'll need at least 4 seconds to deliver the ball."
Yeah.
So he took a 14-step drop in order to give him time to throw the ball, which is crazy. 14 steps back, right?
Wow.
But he also knows that his arm is strong enough that he can be running backwards and throw the ball in the air 50 yards.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like, okay, that's a cheat code, man.
Yeah,
that's
he's the game genie.
And, you know, so, you know, it'd be interesting to see what happens. Yeah, watching what happens for this sort of second half of Cam Newton's career is actually going to be an interesting storyline at the NFL this year.
It just makes – it frustrates me with him because – he gave up his body. Like, he gave up so many, his prime, getting pounded on. It's a whole, like, black people can take pain and all that stuff. And, you know, like, he's not really going to get hurt. And he's, like, this Iron Man. And he's, like, kind of like a stoic, I don't know, not even really a stoic guy, but just kind of like, I'm going to get hit. And I'm going to take these hits. And the Panthers didn't do any. He dragged them to the Super Bowl that year. They had a great record, but he dragged them to the Super Bowl, and they, you know, they just didn't do anything to help him. You know, you had this kid. What's the kid? I went to school with his sister, the running back Christian from Stanford. Oh my God!
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah.
With his aunt, I went to school with, and you know, like he's something, but it just didn't seem like they did much for him to provide him with any real weapons.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it's always a tough situation. It's, you know, anytime you're playing not healthy,
mm-hmm.
and you know, if this team focuses on you so much or relies on you that much, and you play unhealthy, and then that you're not playing as well. So the good thing is he hasn't played football in a long time. So
yeah, I'm trying to think, who was it, Kyle Allen, that got picked up? I was just like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, you know, I mean, maybe it could be a situation to where if he's healthy, you know, if he didn't take too much of a beating to where it's like he'll never be the same again.
Yeah.
But, you know, he might come out healthy and like have this great second act of his career, which happens, you know.
People sometimes
give up on somebody when they have an injury, and that motivates them to have like this great second act. The hope is that he gets put in a good situation, though. The thing is, if he goes and starts for a bad team, it's like that might not be very helpful.
Right. He looks great, though. He looks like an Adonis. Like, he looks amazing. It's just like I was seeing, looking at him work. I was like, Jesus Christ, he'll get a team. Like, we'll see what happens after the draft. And I think Jameis will get a team, too. You know, it's just he got LASIK. And then all those interceptions weren't his fault. And it was one of my buddies on this podcast that I listened to, the Firestarter podcast. Chris Godwin, one of Jameis's former receivers, was saying all those weren't his fault. And he was like, some of them were my fault, and some of them were other people's faults. Wasn't all Jameis.
Yeah, and what's also great about it too is I think there's enough depth of black quarterbacks that even if Jameis doesn't ever sort of like, you know, become more than maybe if he becomes a backup quarterback, it's okay.
Right, right. I'll still be mad, but yeah.
It's not like it was in like late 90s where it's like we really need God, I'm trying to think of what was the guy's name. I used to love this guy. Was it Jeff Blake? Yeah.
Played with the Bengals?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like we all have to become Jeff Blake fans because he's the only like one in the league.
Or Rodney Pete or
this person needs to be starting somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
Jeff Blake, Rodney Pete, maybe Cam Newton will kind of have the Randall Cunningham situation.
Maybe,
you know? That Randall Cunningham is like, oh, really? Put me on the Vikings? With Randy Moss? All right.
I get to throw
Randy Moss and Chris Carter?
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens. That keeps me enjoying the league and having something to invest in every week, because I don't do fantasy football. The closest thing I do to that is like playing Madden. And I bought Madden this past year, and I really enjoyed playing that. You know, like it's just been more, it's kind of like a renaissance with me, like enjoying the football. So I hope we get it back. Are you missing basketball?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron only. I'm basically a LeBron fan.
Me
like
too.
That's the way my basketball is. So it's like you really want to see him, like getting one with the Lakers.
Yeah,
it just kind of puts the cap on everything. It's like you lead. He doesn't have to get six championships. It's like when you do, you know, when you take three different franchises,
you've done it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you've done something that nobody has ever done. Just like right. Always walk into any city and like win you a championship.
Absolutely. Yeah. You can't say shit about him.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's his legacy. I mean, his legacy's already there.
I agree.
But it just takes him into that. It just takes him into another level. But the thing is, you know, you get nervous about this coronavirus, right? Because the first thing I thought is like, oh shit, LeBron doesn't have that many prime years. Maybe, I mean, he's showing no sign of slowing down, but like, you know, but you're like, we can't be afford to be like not having seasons.
Yeah it's that's the scary thing, because I think they had a chance to win it this year. Like I know the Bucks, Giannis is emerging and stuff like that, but I don't think they're not going to win.
Not with a young AD. And, no. Like, you know, maybe this will actually end up helping, right? Because the thing about LeBron is, like, the idea is getting tired or, you know, so now he's getting even more rest.
Yeah.
So I'd be interested. Yeah, I was like, this year he's got enough pieces
right there,
too, you know, and everybody kind of knows their role on that team. You know what I mean?
Do you believe that AD will step up?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
That's the thing. When the pressure is not, when those guys, you know, when you have a player that's already a top tier player,
mm-hmm.
and they understand that LeBron being there means that the pressure is not on them. So all they have to do is just go show out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have the ultimate confidence in those guys, you know. There's a reason why, there's a reason why Kyrie Irving, like, look at how he looked in Cleveland, face everything past Cleveland now.
Yeah.
It's different than being the man and then having the man next to you that allows you to do everything without taking any of the heat or the attention, you know what I mean?
What do you think is wrong with him?
He's not built to be he is elitely talented.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a leader's mentality.
He would think that it's like he's like Bomani Jones says, he think he Kobe.
Yeah, well, he has that talent level,
mm-hmm.
but he doesn't have that lead. He doesn't have any leadership, that kind of leadership quality or the desire, right? Like, the thing about leadership is wanting to take everything on, the good and the bad. That's different than just saying, I want to go somewhere and be the man.
Yeah.
That's a different thing. Like, leadership means you want to be, and it's about your relationship with your teammates and stuff like that. So, yeah, it's just, I think injuries haven't helped either.
Right.
But I, you know, the whole taking shots at LeBron thing, that should have been the alarm bell.
Mm-hmm.
That should have been the alarm bell for everybody, right? It's like, who takes shot at the guy that delivered you a world championship when you were losing 100 games before he came back to town?
Yeah.
You guys were a lottery team. Mm-hmm. It's like, Kyrie, there's a reason why you're on this team.
Yeah. I love watching him play. Like, he's a beautiful basketball player. Like, it just, and I love using him in 2K when I can, but like, it's just, it's like, dude, you gotta show us something, man. Like, obviously he hit that shot in the finals, which was ice cold, you know, but it's like, dude, I don't know, man.
Yeah, it's different than, you know, you hit that shot, but it's like to carry a team and to lead a team through, you know.
Yeah.
The whole season, it's just a different animal, you know what I mean?
Yeah, a different animal. He might just be
kind of a different kind of cat, you know. So
that's kind of like what Kevin Durant said. Like, he said like maybe like earlier this season, he was like, you know, he's an artist and you know he's different. So I'm like, all right, let's see how it works. God willing, when everything gets back to some form of normalcy, and when you guys start playing together.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not. I mean, let's see. Both those guys have something to prove, man.
Yeah. Because it's like you could be like, I am. I think these guys are amazing players. Kevin Durant's from my hometown, and it's like, I like you, but you don't have to be so petulant. It's like, you're great. Don't worry about what everybody else says. You know, just play. Don't. Who gives a shit what the media says?
Yeah, like, you know, a lot of red flags, man.
Mm-hmm.
Talk shit about LeBron after he brings you to the title, and then you talk about how you won out. You go into Boston, which is like was the best situation in the mm-hmm. East, and you fuck that up. it's like the best possible situation. You get sent to the heir apparent.
Yeah.
Was supposed to be the heir apparent to the Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. That situation gets fucked up, you know, and it's like, okay. I don't know, you know, we'll see. This guy's got a lot of, you know, and Durant, you know what I mean? It's like, you're one of the best, but you never led I mean, you had so many pieces at Golden State.
Right.
To where you can't be put in that top tier. He can't be put in the tier with his talent until he leads a team himself there.
Right. It's like, I want to see it happen. I just... We'll see. I mean, that's what makes the NBA fun. It's like all the drama, all the personalities and all that stuff makes it interesting and like the soap opera off the court. But it's like, yeah, you got to do like it annoys me that, you know, yes, LeBron is old, but it just annoys me how the media is constantly trying to get him out the league. We've got the next guy. It was supposed to be, you know, all these guys, but LeBron is still there. You know, he's still standing like Antoine Fisher, you know?
Yeah, there's never going to be, you know, it was the same thing with Jordan. They always had a next Jordan.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, we got Harold Miner. we got, who else did we got? You know,
Grant Hill.
Cedric Ceballos. Grant Hill. You know, they'll get a, you know, they're always kind of trying to find the next big thing.
Kobe was the only one that wanted it, that really, like, planted his flag and said, I'm going to try. Everybody else was like, I mean, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that I want to be Jordan. But, you know, Kobe, you know, I'm not even saying that because he's dead. I'm saying that, like, he was the closest.
No, he very obviously wanted to be Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Yeah, but everybody
in every way possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody else is just kind of like shun that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just the marketing and stuff, and it'd be interesting to see in an alternate universe, right? You know, if Kobe doesn't have that case, right?
Yeah.
How does he get marketed?
Well, you know, and it's he beat that. He beat Me Too. He won an Oscar.
Yeah, I mean, that was all afterwards, but there's a few, like, there's kind of like an immediate aftermath of that, right? It takes advertisers time to come back to them.
Yeah, it did. But they did, though. It's amazing. It was just like Bomani Jones had a good take on it, like where he was just kind of saying, I'm paraphrasing everything that I'm going to say here is a paraphrasing, but it's just like he was right behind, like, a lot of these people. Like, I think the reason why most people, because there was a dude that, like, his Bomani Jones' show, like, people will call in and they can leave voicemails to talk about what Kobe meant, you know, when that happened and everything. And it was one dude, grown-ass man, was just crying. And he was just saying how, like, everybody was constantly trying to erase Kobe, like, with regards to, like, LeBron coming into the league being such a force and so much, like, media around him. And Kobe just was kind of, he was there and he was an excellent player, but it was just something like a constant thing where he was always a little behind trends. And
yeah, he's squeezed, right? He comes into the league
96.
When Michael Jordan is still in the league.
Yes. Yeah.
And still like still crushing it, you mm-hmm. know, in 96, right?
Right.
And then by the time Kobe, you know, I mean, like, he kind of shares the spotlight with Shaquille O'Neal mm-hmm. in the greatest, like, maybe the, you know, the greatest team success part of his career, right?
Yeah.
And then by the time the Lakers are his, right, LeBron is there.
Right.
And LeBron is, like, just comes into the league and is really, like, an elite guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, immediately.
Yes.
Like, immediately, like, Cleveland's in the playoffs. and, you know, like, battling the Detroit Pistons that won a title, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So, he's kind of, you know, he's kind of squeezed there. I'll tell you who's really erased, though. Nobody's ever going to talk about this. Nobody, you know, it's like, who's really erased in this period is Tim Duncan.
Well, part of he's first ballot Hall of Famer, but he never wanted any of that.
He never wanted the attention, but that's the thing. It's like, I very much like, I love Kobe, but it is a legit, like, in the, because of the, you know, like, sort of tragic thing, people are going to get mad at this, right?
It's
the
whole, yeah, I know what you, I know.
Yeah. There's like an emotional element
of
to
course,
this, right?
Of course, of course.
But it's like, dude, Tim Duncan is every bit as good as Kobe, and they played in the league at the same time.
Yeah. It's that
and
whole.
And Tim Duncan never gets put in that, it never gets put in that conversation, right? Because the Kobe thing is so much that Kobe wanted to be Jordan and he played the same position and he had a lot of the same moves. It's like, it's like a semi resurrection of Jordan, and people have this connection with Jordan, right?
Yeah.
And it's also about, like, playing in for the Lakers, you know. It's like Tim Duncan comes into the NBA, is immediately the man, by the way, on a team that had David Robinson, but nobody was saying David Robinson was better than Tim Duncan.
No.
And he wins 5 championships. The Spurs have just this amazing run of, you know, of playoff success. They're like the Spurs are like the Patriots of the NBA, to where, like, their rosters are radically different between championships.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, look, yeah, you're like, that guy only won 1 or 2 rings.
Yeah,
you could just put anybody in there, you know, with Duncan.
Right. It's just like people will say that's like nobody wants to watch that basketball, that Spurs type of basketball, or it's boring or whatever. But they'll say, you know, he's one of the top best power forwards to ever play the game, but he just was not like flashy, or nobody cared, or he didn't care anything about the fanfare at all.
Yeah, San Antonio's a small market.
Yeah.
He's not a personality by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah.
But it's just like, that shouldn't matter.
Right. Oh, no, I agree with you. No, I agree with you 100%. Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Like, that shit has nothing to do with the 5 rings that guy won.
Right.
Like, also, too, like, 5 rings and, like, man, also stopping LeBron.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He like, also had Kawhi Leonard, he's like too.
The
but yeah.
Why LeBron doesn't have, like, 4 rings already.
Right.
Tim Duncan.
Who, like, is AD the best player he's ever played with?
Ooh.
AD better than D Wade?
It's hard to say. D Wade is D, like, yeah, young D Wade is pretty
flat. I mean, he 06 could, Wade, it wasn't 06 D Wade, same as, not the same as 2010 D Wade or 11 or 12. Well, but yeah, he's still dope, still a great player.
He could be, he could go down as that, but you can't say, like, D Wade is low key. If you go shooting guards, you got to put him probably as maybe like, you could maybe put him as maybe like the 5th best shooting guard ever.
Yeah. 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 I would not argue with that.
But Davis has a skill set. He has all the tools to be better.
Yeah.
To be one of the top guys ever.
I just want to see it. Like, I want to see it happen. That's why I asked you, like, 10 minutes earlier, I was like, do you think he's going to do it? Because, like, he can't stay healthy.
Yeah, that's a tough conversation. Yeah, it's, you know, it's just like, yeah, it's like he has all those things, but D-Wade has this resume, right?
Yes.
D-Wade also wins with different guys in different ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade to be a guy. That's another guy, man.
Did you watch that documentary?
I didn't see the documentary. I was just saying, as far as like the, like, Kobe is, like, again, incredible, right?
Yeah.
But it's like, hey man, D Wade was really good.
Like, yeah, yeah.
I think overshadowed by his teammates, right?
Another small market team.
Yeah, and just, you know, he has Shaq.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and then LeBron and Chris Bosh come to town, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, could D Wade have just like led some teams to some stuff?
Probably.
I think so.
Yeah, if he had a better.
Yeah.
Yeah, he took him to the playoffs before.
But, yeah, you know, a great player. No, and just great clutch player. That's the thing about D Wade.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He's amazing when it matters. Like, his numbers are so good in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think he's great. He just we talk about his greatness, it's almost like you kind of forget about him because all these other guys are so heralded and their personalities are a lot bigger. You know, like, if you kind of forget, then you watch the documentary, you're just like, "Oh, Jesus Christ, he was great."
Yeah, this guy was amazing.
Yeah, it's like he was doing Jordan shit in that 06 run. Just like, wow, like, you're not, he's, you know, going to the line all the time and penetrating to the basket, all that stuff. You kind of forget about it.
He's the only guy that could be married to Gabrielle Union and be like, not the flashiest guy on his team in Miami.
Yeah, it's a mix, because it's like, it's just like he's got game on and off the court, but he just fits, he just reminds me, like, I'm Dwayne Wade. So, I don't know, you know, ladies, whatever, you know, it's like I'm Dwayne Wade. I'm not going to be, because that's what I was thinking, like, personality wise, he didn't seem that flashy to me. He just let his work speak. And then it's maybe that Midwestern swagger, too. That Midwestern, like, I just work hard. I went to Marquette, you know, I went to college in Wisconsin, married my childhood sweetheart. High school sweetheart or whatever, and I just got this work ethic where I can hoop, and you know, I don't know.
Yeah, underappreciated. I think guy, I like weirdly enough, but yeah, I mean, I think too. You know, when you play with two, when your career is anchored by these like icons, right?
Yeah,
it's like, you know, Shaq is. is always going to be put on up on everybody's lists, and right. like LeBron is really in the elite. He's in the top two to top three guy conversation yeah. of all time. So
yeah, Wade means so much to Miami too. Like he still means a lot to him and all that stuff. It's just fun. Like it's fun, but I thought I'd bring that up to you to see what you thought, because it's like one of those things where you just think like, yeah, well, yeah, Tim Duncan was really fucking good. You could just kind of be so, I don't know, like, because now the world's become even smaller than it was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah,
but for at sure. the same time, you could still see, like, you could still be watching your NBA, and you're still like, oh, yeah, those guys in Milwaukee are good. Oh, and you don't know that, you kind of don't know it until April, till they're, like, beating the shit. And it's like the Raptors, like, I think one of my buddies, comic Jason Lawhead, I believe he called the Raptors taking it last year, where he was just like, they got a good team, man, and Kawhi. Like, you know, they thought they were shipping Kawhi. You know, they literally shipped him out of the country, but they thought that he wasn't going to do anything. And, like, those guys, you know, gelled, and they played together, man, and they took him out. Yeah, we had those injuries from KD and Clay, obviously, but they didn't fuck around, man. They came to play. And you think about, like, he made, like, Kawhi Leonard made Joel Embiid cry, and he made Giannis cry in that run last year. He's cold, man. But I think
it was fun watching, like, Toronto win.
Me
you
too.
Know, like,
yeah, I enjoyed
it. I don't even like Drake, but I did like it that they had like a celebrity mascot.
Yeah, yeah. Why don't you like Drake? Do you think he tries too hard?
It's just music. It's just, you know, it's just like, I don't like trap music, and he makes a lot of stuff that kind of sounds like trap.
Yeah.
And then he also does like, you know, like bad singing. Like he can't sing, but he sings on a lot of songs. Like, but he can't sing.
Yeah.
So I find that to be kind of a interesting combo.
Yeah, it's a lot of guys are getting away with that, man. I thought like in 2009 when he had that, oh my God, what's the name of his first tape? That tape that was really hot that everybody was excited about. Oh my God. I hate when cause I want to sound cool and act like I knew it off the rip. Drake discography. It was a mixtape. It was not. It's not If You're Reading This. It's So Far Gone. That was like he did some stuff with Little Brother. He had a song with Fonte and Big Pooh and like some stuff. And I was like, oh, it's not bad. But then everybody was going ape shit over this guy. I was like, you know, he feels a need for people. I'm glad he's showing his baby around.
Well, it's gonna be weird because he's like he's the king of like the digital era, right? So he's gonna have like all these stats that won't make sense, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He'll technically be like probably the best selling artist of all time or something, right? Because they'll be like, well, he had 900 number one singles.
Yeah.
Like he's like if you don't compare, yeah. Like, it's just like he's gonna be kind of like Wilt Chamberlain. Like it's gonna come with like an asterisk. Like it's like, oh, you know, Wilt is like, oh, there's a lot of white guys like in the NBA.
I just think he's fine. It's like I fucking hate him, but he's not like his contemporaries. Like, is he better than Kendrick? No. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, he's not particularly better than anyone except for knowing. Like it's like Drake. You're like the girl that you like likes Drake, and that's his.
Yeah,
and that's hey man, that's how you win, man.
He's a handsome guy. I mean, I get that why women like him and stuff. He's a handsome guy, and sometimes it seems like with his appearances on SNL, it doesn't seem like he takes himself too seriously.
Yeah,
sometimes. So that's one thing I can appreciate about him, but. Other than that, I'm like, yeah, I get it. It's fine. And I'm 40. I go up to shows. I go to shows and, you know, people think I'm an undercover cop. So it's fine. Let the kids have their fun and enjoy him, you know. I have no problem with them. Well, Justin, man, dude, I don't want to hold you too long, man. I'm glad you were able to do this. I was glad to bug you and glad you agreed to do this. Do you want to plug some stuff? I mean, I know we're not doing anything, but you and before the apocalypse, you had a monthly comedy show. Hopefully people can go back to.
If you live in New Jersey, when we get back to live performance, Brick City Comedy Review, first Friday of every month at Kilkenny Ale House. You know, you can find the lineups and everything on Eventbrite once we get going again. But yeah, just go to my Twitter, Justin W. Comedy, all one word, at Justin W. Comedy, JustinWilliamsComedy.com. You send me an email, I'll come to your house.
And you got some albums, two albums.
That's right. I have two albums. One of them is called Mostly Woke. Then one of them is called Stories About New Jersey from the Basement of a Pizza Shop.
Where did you do that at? We talked about it before, but I'm trying to remember what pizza shop did you... Was that in Newark?
Yeah, I did it in the bottom of a basement of a pizza shop in Newark.
That was like a festival, right? That you headlined?
It's part of the Newark Arts Festival. Yeah, so I did it at Mercado Tomato Pie. If you've been to the Prudential Center, you've walked by this place.
Okay. Cool, man. Well, I'll tag you and stuff when I upload it. And hold on to the line, man. Thanks so much for doing this, Justin. I appreciate you. Everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.